Hey, this is Brad. We're off today, but please enjoy this encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Guys, I don't know how to break this to you, but I think the president might be racist. I know I sound crazy.
What? Not my president.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck
from
in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Up in Oregon on 91.7 KYAQ on the Central Coast, 106.7 KSO in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 92.9 WLRI. Out in Maui, Hawaii on 88.5 KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1. In Palinville, New York on 102.9 WLPP. In Grand Rapids, Michigan on WPRR. In New Orleans on 102.3 WHIV. In Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ 90.1. In Concord, New Hampshire on WNHN 94.7. Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ 97.3 and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Workforce Rising, and Detour Talk, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman. Your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Desi Doyen is next to me and already smiling.
Just trying to keep up with it all.
Aren't we, though? Hey, let's start out with a correction. We like to put our corrections right up front whenever we can. Philip Ricketts left a comment last night at bradblog.com to say, "Dear Brad and Desi, Representative Keith Ellison, Democrat, 5th District of Minnesota."
Ah, yes.
Not Michigan, as I incorrectly uttered on our previous program. Thank you very much, Philip, for that. In my defense, I was drunk at the time. Actually, not really. Just dumb or speaking too fast. Thank you very much for that correction, Philip. Apologies to the good folks in Minnesota, particularly those that have been so supportive from the great AM 950 KTNF. I hate to rob them of their fine Congress member, Keith Ellison. And by the way, I hope folks up in KTNF, I hope you realize how lucky you are to have a major progressive commercial station on your airwaves up there. You are one of the very, very few major metropolitan areas. Maybe the only one at this point, I don't know, with such a station left pretty much in the entire U.S. So please support both them and their advertisers at KTNF. And if you catch an error by me or by Desi,
yes,
particularly by Desi, because she screws up a lot, write us anytime at bradcast@bradblog.com or stop by bradblog.com. Leave a comment there.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Let's see. Here's... thought I would never say this, thought this would never happen, but as I noted last night on Twitter, my congratulations to George W. Bush. I never imagined that it would ever be possible in my lifetime or anybody else's lifetime, frankly, but George W. Bush, you are no longer the worst president ever. Can't believe I'm saying that, but I'm saying it. Really, never thought that would happen.
I know,
after
I know.
All of those years of George W. Bush, it seemed like they couldn't. There could never be another Republican president of any party that would be worse than George W. Bush. Newsflash, we now got one. So we now have a president of the United States who calls Haiti and El Salvador and Africa, which, by the way, is not a country. I don't know if Donald Trump knows that or not, but he calls them all blank hole countries. And now I know most of the folks in the media are now actually using the word. Even NPR is now using the word. I'm not gonna, because I like our affiliates too much. And I know the way the FCC works, and I know that people, that they will be stuck. If I say something that people complain about, they will have to deal with it. So I'm going to try to avoid using that word. But we're now stuck with a president who is making comments like that, that I'm sure you have heard of. And, you know, news anchors such as Don Lemon on CNN, who must begin his primetime broadcast by saying, "Welcome to CNN. The president of the United States is a racist." Just an amazing turn of events when it comes to our cable news channels.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people say, gosh, you can't really be surprised by this. Yes, 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 I can. And I don't think that it should pass muster. It should be allowed to just go by because, oh, well, this is just who he is. Boys will be boys. Trump will be Trump. No.
Well, it's not. It is remarkable, but not because we didn't know it previously, but because, you know, you've got now news anchors, in my opinion, news anchors on cable television who are willing to say so, who are willing to just come out and say it without hedging and hemming and hawing and giving the benefit of the doubt that is usually what has been traditional with such gigs on outlets like CNN. But, you know, of course, Donald Trump is the king of the trolls. So, of course, his blatantly racist comments, which today he's sort of denying, though, frankly, nobody believes him. Nobody. Of course, you know, those comments and others are meant to troll all of us. And usually it works. The entire country, including me, we get just justifiably freaked out about it because it's insane. How insane is it? Well, since I'm not going to let him completely derail this program with his racist garbage, if I can, I will offer just a couple of comments in response. And just to underscore how insane this is, I've already congratulated George W. Bush for no longer being the worst American president ever. But I'm going to double down here and actually use some tweets from Glenn Beck. Glenn Flippin' Beck. And I'm going to agree with his comments.
Wow.
I know. In short, he had this short Twitter rant on all of this. And among his responses, he said, "Please, POTUS, stop speaking. Do not try to defend hashtag blank hole countries to me." He said, "I have been to Haiti. My charity is currently on the ground doing work there tonight. If you go there and that is all that you see in the people, then you are blind." He said, "I see people trapped by a corrupt government, which the U.S. has enabled, and it has enabled and actually created for years in Haiti, decades, centuries at this point." Glenn Beck says, "What is wrong with you?" He was specifically talking about the people. In other words, the people of those countries, not those countries. Why do we have to take all these people from these blank countries? He says, by way of comparison, "Why do we have to take all these Jews from Nazi Germany? That would be about Jews, not about Germany." Glenn Beck urges people to stop defending the indefensible. and that's all, I want to say that's all that his comments deserve for the moment. Has he been removed from office yet? Let me know if that happens during this hour, Des. All right, one more. Frank Luntz, Frank Flipping Luntz, said 43% of immigrants from blank hole African countries, 43% of those immigrants have a bachelor's degree or higher. Compare that to just 33% of the overall American population. He notes Nigerian Americans, for instance, have a median household income well above the American average. Over one quarter of Nigerian Americans have a graduate degree, as compared with only about 11% of whites in this country. Josh Marshall notes that Trump's words are terrible, but the attitude and the mindset is terrible. But what's really important here, much more than the words, is that this attitude and strategy are embodied in the White House's policies. That's what matters.
I would also note that it also matters that Republicans haven't really come out and said much of anything about this.
Of course not. Of course not. They won't. They'll say only as much as they have to say.
And then hope it blows over.
But it's, you know, it's not just embodied in his immigration policies, as Josh notes from TPM. It's embedded into his policing, his law enforcement policies, his drug policies, and much more, including, yes, his voting and election policies, such that he actually has any. And here, like in so many of the areas, as we'll discuss today, the racism is not only only his, but it is the entire Republican Party. There is a reason they are not coming out and defending him. They have been instituting racist policies in order to try and win elections for years in this country, and they seemingly have no actual plan to stop doing so. At least Donald Trump doesn't. Trump did an interview published last night by the Wall Street Journal, who had reported on his extraordinary comments, that claiming that one of the investigators on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team committed treason because it had been discovered that he had sent a text message that disapproved of Trump. He also, by the way, this FBI guy, career FBI guy, also sent text messages disapproving of Democrats, Bernie Sanders, and others. But I'll let other folks respond to that and those idiotic treason comments. I wanted to highlight this part of the Wall Street Journal article interview with Donald Trump. In Thursday's interview, they said Mr. Trump also said the U.S. is taking steps to ensure that Russia and other countries don't try to influence future elections. Trump said, quote, "We are going to be very, very careful about Russia and about anybody else, by the way." They say the president declined to detail any specific actions underway to protect the electoral system beyond saying that his administration is, quote, working on different solutions and all sorts of fail-safes.
I'm sure they'll be beautiful.
Yeah, the most beautiful fail-safes ever. Well, here's the deal. We got no fail-safes. Nor is his administration working on any solutions, much less, you know, a whole bunch of different ones. He's just making stuff up, as he does, when he doesn't know anything about something, which is almost everything. Now, I can't tell you what he said specifically beyond that, specifically from the transcript, because that's behind Wall Street Journal's paywall, and I will not put money into Rupert Murdoch's pocket by paying for that one. But I use it to jump into this really pathetic story on Kris Kobach that I've been trying to get to really for the past week or so since Trump shut down his so-called Presidential Commission on Election Integrity, which was a sham commission meant to do nothing more than create phony evidence of massive voter fraud so that Trump could try to justify his loss to Hillary Clinton in the popular vote, which drives him absolutely nuts, which drives him crazy. He just simply can't deal with the fact that he lost to Hillary Clinton by 3 million votes in the popular vote. And actually, he lost by 11 million votes in the popular vote if you count all of the other candidates that did not vote for Donald Trump. He's pretended that anywhere from 3 to 5 million votes were cast for Clinton, fraudulently cast by non-citizens or double voters or Hillary Clinton-loving leprechauns or something. It's unclear because nobody seems to have any actual evidence of that. But he convened this phony commission to get to the bottom of it. And of course, he put the infamous GOP voter fraud fraudster, Kris Kobach, who is the Kansas Secretary of State, he put him in charge of this commission, and Kobach immediately, as expected, for those of us who have followed Kobach's career, Kobach screwed it all up in every imaginable way, leading to like 8 different lawsuits, literally, including one from an actual commissioner who is on the commission itself, Democratic Secretary of State Matt Dunlap. He sued the commission because they weren't sharing documents and information with them, and Matt Dunlap won that lawsuit. Kris Kobach lost. So in the wake of this fraudulent, failed commission that was finally just shut down by Donald Trump. And I think it's really a metaphor for the entire administration. It was a fraudulent committee looking at fraudulent fraud, and it was just shut down because they gave
shoddily
up because
created.
There was nothing there. Yeah, yeah. Kind of the way he does everything, it seems. In any event, after this commission was shut down last week, there were a lot of thoughts from a lot of folks about it. This one from Steve Almond at WBUR up in Boston. The president's absurd election integrity commission is dead. This, you'll recall, was the panel convened to prove that millions of illegal immigrants voted in the 2016 election. He said, I hope it will not shock any of the MAGA trolls out there. Make America great again, trolls out there, to learn that this claim did not pan out. Indeed, the entire boondoggle is probably best thought of as the losing by 3 million votes to a girl who reminds me of just how small my hands are commission. The panel did achieve one core Trumpian objective, however. Aside from wasting taxpayer money, it managed to keep the media focused on the fake news story of voter fraud, which is virtually non-existent. Almond says now that the panel has gone the way of the border wall and Anthony Scaramucci and coherent presidential speech patterns, the Democrats should consider launching a panel of their own, one on voter suppression. Oh, there's an idea, an actual problem in this country. Why, says Almond? Well, because Republicans have been openly working to disenfranchise poor and minority voters for decades. They do this using numerous tactics. Here are just a few outlined in the United Nations recent report on poverty in the U.S. Quote, from the U.N. Quote, artificial and unnecessary ID requirements, the blatant manipulation of polling station locations, the relocating of DMVs to make it more difficult for certain groups to obtain IDs. This is the United Nations talking about democracy in the U.S., or what democracy is supposed to be in the U.S., or what the U.S. claims that democracy here is. The U.N., in this recent report on poverty, pointing to one of the root problems in the U.S., the way our elections are run and the way those in poverty have their votes suppressed. Just shameful. And of course, Donald Trump is doing nothing about that other than trying to make it worse. Democrats ought to be yelling and screaming about creating a commission to look at voter suppression. Almond completes his piece saying, with the president's publicity stunt gone, Democrats should highlight the true threat to our democratic integrity, politicians and propagandists who openly attempt to steal elections year after year by rigging the system. The Kansas City editorial board did not hold back in talking about Kris Kobach, and I should note that the Kansas City Star is no lefty paper. It's not a bunch of left-wingers out there in Kansas at the Kansas City Star. They write, the demise of the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity is great news for every American who values a free and fair ballot. The commission was led by Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach, and few will regret the commission's collapse. This saves the nation from a final report that Kobach and others undoubtedly would have used to restrict voter rights in advance of the 2018 midterm elections. Now, remember, Kobach has been the Secretary of State out there since, I believe, 2010. For 8 years now, and he ran solely on the notion of stopping voter fraud in the state of Kansas. And in those 8 years, he has been able to find virtually none out of millions of votes cast in that time and in the years before he became Secretary of State. I think he has brought some 15 cases, mostly against Republicans, by the way, who were signed up and voted in other states as well, most of the time not knowing that they couldn't. But in any event, this epidemic of voter fraud just hasn't panned out. And the Kansas City Star has been watching Kobach just come up with nothing in all of these years.
And waste public resources to do it.
They say it must be repeated. There is no evidence of widespread voter impersonation fraud in the U.S. That's the only type that could be stopped by the photo ID restrictions that Republicans have been getting passed around the country for years now. They say there is no evidence that millions of votes were cast illegally in 2016. No legitimate commission investigation would have found otherwise. They say a legitimate election commission would have acknowledged that reality. It would have examined aging equipment, voting equipment, complicated registration procedures, inconvenient voting times and days, and the potential for electronic interference with casting ballots. Good for them. A legitimate commission would have studied the impact of voter ID requirements on turnout, particularly with elderly and minority voters. I would add student voters as well, young voters. It would have called for the end of cross-check, a haphazard and costly effort to disenfranchise voters. A legitimate commission would have explored ways to expand the electorate to make sure everyone who can cast a legal ballot has a chance to do so. But they note Kobach is not interested in that, neither is Trump. Kansans have paid particular attention to the controversy surrounding the commission. Given Kobach's current job as Secretary of State, they note he's also now a candidate for governor in Kansas. The commission's history should help Kansas voters evaluate his candidacy for the state's highest office. They say the Election Integrity Group had all the hallmarks of a classic Kobach operation. Headline-grabbing allegations, poor legal review, finger-pointing followed by inaction, contradictory claims, and eventually collapse. Kansans will need to decide if that's how they want the governor's office to operate. Well, hey, they already got Sam Brown back if that's what they want. He's on his way out. He has pushed much of that. Now, Adam Gladstone at bradblog.com, a commenter there, said, wrote in to say right after the collapse of this commission, when I was sort of poo-pooing those who were frightened that this from Kobach's claims that, the Democrats made a big mistake by challenging this commission because now we're going to move all of this. We're going to do the same investigation. We're going to move it to DHS, to the Department of Homeland Security, where it's not as transparent, where you can't make all of these public records requests and so forth. Adam writes in to say, Brad, the commission is not disbanded. It is moving to Homeland Security, and it will be able to avoid FOIA requests. This is much worse. He then links to a short piece from our friend Greg Pallast making that argument. I stand by my original statement that no, we don't have to be frightened about what goes on moving this over to the DHS, that it won't be much worse over there. As a matter of fact, it'll be a hell of a lot harder for the DHS to get away with a lot of the stuff that Kobach was trying to get away with. All of that led to some reporting, some very good reporting. Tierney Sneed has been doing a great job following up on this over a Talking Points memo. She wants to know, well, what the hell actually is going on at the DHS with Kobach's voter fraud mess, since Kobach had bragged to Breitbart, where he also writes, he has a paid writing gig there, even while he's Secretary of State, even while he was heading up this commission. He said, the investigations will continue now. They won't be able to stall it through litigation because now it's at the DHS. However, Sneed notes, the DHS itself is distancing itself from Kobach big time. DHS spokesman Tyler Holton said in a statement alluding to the department continuing this work that Mr. Kobach is not advising the department on this matter. Kobach had said he would be advising. He was remaining on as an advisor to DHS. DHS apparently disagrees. Election experts have told TPM that what DHS can do to pick up on Kobach's quest is really a mystery at this point at best. The agency is likely to run into many of the same issues that the commission itself did, perhaps even thornier ones. They have not been eager to tout any cooperation with the Kobach's commission. It's perhaps not surprising, then, that in the filings for the litigation surrounding the commission, the DHS has played down whether it would turn over the data that Kobach hoped to use from it. So Kobach was hoping to give this voter data that he had collected from the states, he was hoping to compare it against DHS's files on who is a citizen and who is not, and has sort of hinted that that data would be handed over to DHS and to the Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, leading to some speculation that ICE would be taking over this case with their investigative arm. But it is not clear whether a criminal investigation into mass voter fraud is something that ICE is even interested, much less equipped, to take on. Justin Levitt, top DOJ voting rights attorney under President Obama, he's been on this show throughout the years several times. He said, where would you want to put this effort? There's not a bureau designed to do this kind of large-scale matching at the DHS. Using DHS data to check against voter rolls could result in a slew of false positives, according to experts. And the DHS itself has cautioned states not to use that database that they have, the so-called save data, for trying to do list maintenance, because the save data itself is not up to date. The Kobach Commission faced lawsuits challenging its lack of transparency and potential privacy violations, and putting its work squarely under the DHS now undermines the argument that its defenders would make that it was not a federal agency. They said, you can't sue us. We're a commission. We can't be sued. We're not like an agency. Well, the DHS is subject to Freedom of Information Act requests. It is subject to FOIA requests, no matter the false info that's out there. That's the open records law that the commission claimed to live outside of. But the DHS is also subject to additional protocols regarding how it handles private data. It's also subject to congressional oversight, which come 2019 may be run by Democrats. We'll see. So Tammy Patrick, a senior advisor for the Democracy Fund at the Bipartisan Policy Center, who served on the Presidential Commission on Election Administration under Barack Obama, said it actually may be more transparent, as the federal employees will be conversant in what they are required to provide under the law. Sort of backs up my point that no, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of DHS taking this thing over. It's actually going to be easier to have oversight. One lingering question for months about the commission itself and its cooperation with DHS may now be answered thanks to a judge's order in one of these lawsuits against the commission. With the announcement that the commission was dissolved, its vice chair, Secretary of State Kobach, and the White House had suggested that the DHS would take over the commission's work. Well, the ACLU of Florida, one of the groups suing the commission and suing Florida for turning over state voter roll data to the commission, pointed out the mixed messages that it had received as to whether the DHS would actually have access to this data in a court filing just a few days ago. The U.S. magistrate overseeing the case, Jonathan Goodman, demanded in an order earlier in the week that the commission explain by Thursday where the data is being stored and whether it has been or will be transferred to the DHS. Nobody actually seems to know where this data actually is.
God.
On Tuesday night, a filing from the DHS explains and clarifies that, frankly, Kobach has been lying all along about pretty much everything. DOJ lawyers say that any voter data will now be destroyed instead of being transferred to DHS. This according to legal documents that they filed in this case. Kobach had spent days claiming that the data would be transferred to DHS. DOJ says, nope, Kobach is not telling the truth. He's lying. We're going to destroy the data. In official court papers. Jessica Huseman from ProPublica, who has been following it, says, this is striking. Kobach's claim in the media led to two emergency actions in federal court by separate groups who were, you know, sort of freaked out about the idea that all of this data would now go over to DHS. She says, was he blustering all along? She's asked the office for comment, Kobach's office for comment three times. She's got no response. So despite Kobach claiming that since the commission was shut down, that there were findings, that was the word he used, that they were going to share these findings with the DHS. Well, apparently there are also no findings from the commission. The data collected by the commission will be destroyed and DHS won't get any of it. And there are no findings. How do we square that with the White House and Kobach statements from over the past week? She asks. Nobody knows. Who knows? For example, compare one of the statements made in this court filing from the DOJ. They say, moreover, because the commission was terminated without issuing a final report or making any recommendations, including preliminary findings, blah, 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 we'll destroy the documents. So they're admitting there are no findings. Compare that, what the DOJ said in court documents, to what Kobach said at Breitbart in his article just after the commission was disbanded. He said, thus far, the Voter Fraud Commission has revealed 938 convictions for voter fraud since the year 2000, fewer than one in 100 cases end in a conviction. In Kansas alone, there are 127 known cases of non-citizen aliens registering to vote. He goes on and on with this information as if it was findings from the commission. No, it wasn't. And now they're forced to admit that. The DOJ is, at least in court documents. So you might think that destroying the data rather than giving it to the DHS, that that's a good thing. But in the case of one of the Democratic commissioners on the commission, the one who sued the commission itself, that is not a good thing. Because a lot of it is actually damning evidence on the commission. That, at least, is according to Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, who says, no, don't destroy any of this information. I've got a judge's order. You're supposed to give me all of this information that I wasn't being given before. He thinks there could be some damning stuff in there that he was not allowed to see because, you know, he's a Democrat. And about the scheming by this commission, by the White House, by Donald Trump, by Mike Pence, the vice president.
Exactly, what they were planning to do, what they were fomenting.
So the lawsuit and shame goes on. I suspect we will continue to follow that story. Right now, let's get to a quick break. We got much more ahead on the broadcast all around the world. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. We'll be back soon. His voice is calling all over the world. Yep. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All over the world, they're talking about what Donald Trump's remarkable comments. The fallout has been swift around the world to those racist comments that Donald Trump reportedly made on Thursday. Late last night, Trump said he was canceling a planned trip to the UK, to our best friend, our bestie, the UK, where many lawmakers have said they do not wish to see this president of the United States right now or at all. He was supposed to be there for a ribbon-cutting ceremony at the new U.S. Embassy in London. That's scheduled to happen in a week or so. Trump tweeted the explanation late last night. Reason I canceled my trip to London is that I'm not a big fan of the Obama administration having sold perhaps the best located and finest embassy in London for peanuts, only to build a new one in an off location for $1.2 billion. Bad deal. Want me to cut ribbon? No, he says. Okay, well, It wasn't Obama who moved the embassy. It was actually the Bush administration who did so. It was not Obama. The new building, by the way, is twice the size of the old one, though it is not as large as that blank hole Trump Tower, as I noted on the Twitters last night in response. But wingnut Fox Newsism and Donald Trumpism, this is all beginning to meet real-world reality around the globe now. Of course, Haiti, African nations, and many others are condemning Donald Trump's recent vulgar, disparaging comments about their countries today, as expected. The UK's Guardian, however, reports that Trump is facing a global rebuke for those remarks. Donald Trump, they write, has been branded a shocking and shameful racist after it was credibly reported that he had described African nations as well as Haiti and El Salvador as blank holes and questioned why so many of their citizens had ever been permitted to enter America. This is the UK Guardian writing here. U.S. diplomats around the world were summoned for formal reproach amid global shock that such crude remarks could ever be made in a semi-public meeting by the president of the United States. In a strongly worded statement, the UN said it was impossible to describe his remarks as anything other than racist, while the Vatican decried Trump's words as harsh and offensive. The UN human rights spokesman Rupert Colville, in unusually direct and plain terms, particularly for a diplomat, told a Geneva News briefing today that there is no other word that one can use but racist.
These are shocking and shameful comments from the President of the United States. I'm sorry, but there's no other word one can use but racist. You cannot dismiss entire countries and continents as shitholes whose entire populations, who are not white, are therefore not welcome. The positive comment on Norway makes the underlying sentiment very clear. And like the earlier comments made vilifying Mexicans and Muslims, the policy proposals targeting entire groups on grounds of nationality or religion, and the reluctance to clearly condemn the anti-Semitic and racist actions of the white supremacists in Charlottesville. All of these go against the universal values the world has been striving so hard to establish since World War II and the Holocaust. This isn't just a story about vulgar language. It's about opening the door to humanity's worst side. It's about validating and encouraging racism and xenophobia that will potentially disrupt and even destroy the lives of many people. And that's perhaps the single most damaging and dangerous consequence of this type of comment by a major political figure.
That was Rupert Colville, UN human rights spokesperson, talking about the President of the United States. Lots of fallout around the world. From the U.S. ambassador to Panama, John Feely, a career diplomat and former Marine Corps helicopter pilot. He has resigned, saying he no longer felt able to serve President Donald Trump. But his departure had been communicated to the State Department officials at the end of the year. In other words, before Trump's latest racist comments at the White House on Thursday. This was not a response to Trump's alleged use of the word blank, according to Reuters, who broke this story. Feely, one of the department's Latin American specialists and among its senior most officers, made clear that he had come to a place where he no longer felt able to serve under Donald Trump. Good for him. According to an excerpt of his resignation letter read to Reuters on Friday, Feely said, quote, "As a junior foreign service officer, I signed an oath to serve faithfully the president and his administration in an apolitical fashion, even when I might not agree with certain policies," Feely said. "My instructors made clear that if I believe I could not do that, I would be honor bound to resign. That time has come," said Feely, the U.S. ambassador to Panama. Feeley's career included serving as the number two official in the State Department Bureau that deals with Latin America, as deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City, and as director for Central American Affairs in Washington. So, thanks to Donald Trump, we have lost yet another seasoned, experienced diplomat.
What just really shocks me and I think really brings it home is the comments of the UN spokesperson, you know, who noted that this opens the door to the worst side of humanity. Mm. And the fact that, you know, this has consequences in real life, unleashing these forces, Republicans allowing these comments to go unchallenged, unanswered. These have real life consequences for real life people, not just all over the world, but also here in America.
The Undersecretary of State, Steve Goldstein, told reporters at the State Department in response when asked about this resignation from the U.S. ambassador to Panama. He said that everyone has lines they will not cross. If the ambassador feels that he can no longer serve, then he has made the right decision for himself. We respect that. U.S. officials declined to discuss Feeley's actual reasons for leaving the department after a long career, much of which was spent working on Latin American issues. But, you know, good for him, good for Feeley. Who else will now step up and leave this administration and make it clear that it is because, and this is what was important, that he not only left, but he made it clear as to why. He didn't just say, oh, I want to spend more time with my family.
Right.
And that makes a difference. So who else is going to do that and make it clear why they are no longer willing or able to serve this man and what he stands for? Frankly, everyone who has been appointed by him in the White House and elsewhere, anyone who stays on or at least does not speak out is tacitly supporting him and his racist policies.
Yeah.
And these policies that you correctly know, Des, are going to be so damaging all over the world and back here at home. Many, of course, have been appointed by Trump because they support his racist policies. And if you think that extends only to black and Hispanic countries who are troubled by all of this and Muslim countries, of course, you'd be wrong. While the Netherlands is not Norway, it's pretty close to it. That was where Donald Trump said, of course, why can't we have more people from Norway?
More white people from Norway,
yeah,
is clearly
exactly
what he's talking about.
But even there in the Netherlands, the Trump administration has spread its poison and its racist policies and has insulted their countries. And that now is blowing back on us as well. Trump's new U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands, Pete Hoekstra, he's a former Republican congressman from Michigan who was born in Holland himself before emigrating to the United States. Oddly enough, he claims that he has made about fake news from the media. They don't seem to go over quite as well with foreign news organizations, at least with the journalists in the Netherlands. Just before the end of the year, Hoekstra was being deployed to his own homeland, and the new U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands was caught out essentially lying, blatantly lying twice to a Dutch news crew about 2015 comments that he had made while a Congress member, claiming that the Netherlands themselves were in chaos thanks to Muslim immigration. But when he was asked about those specific comments by the Dutch news crew before the end of the year, claiming he had claimed that there were, you know, so-called no-go zones in the Netherlands, places where non-Muslims were not welcome, where law enforcement didn't even bother to go. When he was asked about that, Hoekstra claimed that those comments had never happened. He had never made any such comments about no-go zones in the Netherlands. In an interview with Dutch journalist Christian Tribert in December, now Ambassador Hoekstra denied those 2015 comments about the Islamic movement creating these so-called no-go zones in the Netherlands.
Speaking of threat, at one point you mentioned in a debate that there are no-go zones in the Netherlands and that cars and politicians are being set on fire in the Netherlands.
I didn't say that. That is actually an incorrect statement Yeah, we would call it fake news.
Is that
I
fake
never
news?
Said that.
Because it's what but, you but literally I, said.
No, it's not what I said.
Oh, yeah. They would call it fake news. Apparently, that's now the policy of everyone who works for the Trump administration. That horrible fake news media making up stuff out of whole cloth. Well, here's what Hoekstra actually said back in 2015.
The Islamic movement has now gotten to a point where they have put Europe into chaos. Chaos in the Netherlands. There are cars being burned. There are politicians that are being burned. And yes, there are no-go zones in the Netherlands.
Huh. That doesn't sound like fake news at all, actually. apparently, the Dutch news crew shared that video. It's on video. Hoekstra making these remarks. They shared that with him. And then they asked, well, if you said that, why did you call it fake news? Hoekstra's response may not shock you.
You call it fake news. Obviously,
I didn't call that fake news. I didn't use the word this today.
No?
No. Okay. I don't think I did.
Okay.
It was the same interview. It was minutes earlier.
To his face.
All right. So that was just after. That was just after Christmas. Fast forward to this past week as the newly minted ambassador to the Netherlands, Piet Hoekstra, held his first news conference with Dutch media at his new residence in The Hague. That did not go well. Dutch journalists peppered him with questions on those unsubstantiated claims that he had made back in 2015 about chaos that the Islamic movement had allegedly brought to the Netherlands, where these people actually live, asking him if he was now willing to acknowledge that he was completely wrong, which he, at the time, this week, refused to concede.
Do you now reach a conclusion that you were wrong when you stated that politicians and cars were being burned? Because you can discuss views, like you said, but not facts. Was that a wrong remark? Was it false?
I issued a statement. I expressed my regrets and my apology for the comments that I made. And I'm not revisiting the issue.
Are politicians being burned in the Netherlands in the past? Is that something you believe, yes or no?
I'm not revisiting the issue.
So you're still sticking to that original remark. You're regretting the newsy remarks, but not the original remarks.
We're going to recall, sorry.
So
they're just not having any of it.
He won't say it's false. He won't take that back. He's not going to talk about it. So after moving on from that fake news journalist, he took questions from another journalist in the room.
Any example of a Dutch politician who has burned recent years?
We got a Bonnie. Good morning, Ambassador.
Good morning.
They wouldn't answer that one either. No examples of Dutch politicians who were burned in recent years. And then they moved on from that one to try to find another to little avail when the reporters sort of all jumped in as a group in response.
This is the Netherlands. You have to answer questions.
Please.
This is not how it works.
Didn't answer his question, didn't answer his question.
If we don't have any further questions, then we can
we
move
do.
On.
We do. This is the Netherlands.
This is not how this works.
You must answer our questions. So this was all a disaster. I mean, this was all making America great again. Certainly in the eyes of the folks in the Netherlands, very proud of our new U.S. ambassador. Well, just before air today, the Washington Post reports that embattled U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands, Piet Hoekstra, apologized on Friday for making unsubstantiated anti-Muslim claims at that conference back in 2015, comments that have clouded his early days in this new post. Hoekstra made the apology during an interview with De Telegraaf, one of the largest Dutch newspapers, at the end of a particularly rough week for the new ambassador, the Post says. Quote, he told the paper, quote, "Looking back, I am shocked I said that."
Oh, what do you know?
"It was a wrong statement. It was wrong," he said. Hoekstra said he couldn't recall what his remark was based on. He said, "I mixed up countries. I was wrong." He mixed up countries. This was his own. He's from the Netherlands originally,
right,
but he mixed it up.
Oh, that must be.
Even though he repeated it over and over. "I was wrong. I can't recall how that could happen. I know I was wrong," he said.
Finally.
It wasn't immediately clear whether Hoekstra's apology also extended to the other instances where he had repeated the no-go zone theory during appearances in right-wing radio, right-wing media. He had made these comments over and over and over again.
Well, they play well among the Republican base.
So it wasn't just that one instance where he didn't know what he was thinking. So we don't know if the apology extends to those other cases and other baseless remarks that he's made about Muslims. For example, speculating that 10 to 15% of the Muslims in the world were radical Islamist militants. 10 to 15%, which the paper notes would be potentially hundreds of millions of people. Hundreds of millions of radical Islamist militants. The State Department distanced themselves from Hoekstra's remarks on Thursday. Boy, they're busy back here at the State Department responding to...
You mean cleaning up messes?
Yep. Let's see. The once again, Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy, Steve Goldstein, said the ambassador made mistakes in 2015, though he declined whether to call them inaccurate. He just wouldn't do it. Goldstein also is a political appointee of Trump. He had said during a Washington briefing that it was his belief that the ambassador should answer reporters' questions in the future after the video of Hoekstra refusing to answer any of these questions. Can you name anyone who was burned recently? Have you gone to the no-go zones?
I have to say I'm very appreciative of those journalists for continuing to press him on this and not letting up.
Yep. Goldstein says he has advised, as I had advised most people, that when reporters are in front of you, just as you are in front of me, it's always good to answer questions. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe not for these guys. I don't know. I point all of this out just by way of noting that this disease that America is now suffering from is not just a Donald Trump disease. He's a symptom of the disease, but this illness is now widespread among the entirety, really, of the Republican Party. Remember, Hoekstra's original comments were from 2015. He was still a member of Congress at the time. This was long before most could even imagine that a guy like Donald Trump could ever become president. So getting rid of Trump, as so many of us would like to see, does not cure the U.S. of the disease that we are all now battling, or that we should all now be battling. It's going to take much more than getting rid of Trump. And if you think that our problems are only with, you know, majority black countries like Haiti or African nations or Muslim countries or Latin American countries, our standing in the world is plummeting, even in nations like the Netherlands. And yes, even in places like Great Britain, where the President of the United States can't even go to open our new U.S. embassy because he fears he will be met with so many protests. Or is that just fake news, Mr. President? I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe.
Oh, boy. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, got just a few minutes here to mop up a few items from over the past. Mop up? I feel like I need to be sterilized, frankly. After this past week, we spoke with Ryan Riley from HuffPo about this incident, this white supremacist who was charged with terrorism up in Nebraska that got no attention whatsoever. With all of this nonsense and all of these guys like Pete Hoekstra going on and on about Muslims this, Muslims that, you know, the fact that you've got far more crime from guys like, and a greater threat from these white supremacists like the one who was arrested up in Nebraska that the Department of Justice did not even tell anyone about. We only know about it because a Nebraska reporter happened upon the documents in the on the court docket. Well, one of the statistics to underscore all of this from Conrad Hackett, senior demographer, an associate director over at Pew Research, posted a tweet at the end of the year that jumped out at me. Statistics of the year. Americans killed annually by all Islamic jihadist terrorists, 9. Armed toddlers, 21. Yes, that's right. More Americans are killed by armed toddlers each year than by all Islamic jihad terrorists in the U.S. By lightning, 31 people are killed. By lawnmowers, 69 people are apparently killed by lawnmowers each year in America. 264 are killed when they're hit by a bus. And this is kind of amazing. Falling out of bed, 737 people die.
Really?
Yeah, where is our war against falling out of bed?
Oh, my goodness.
But by far, the most people are killed each year by being shot by another American. 11,737.
11,000?
11,737, but only 9 of them are apparently by Islamic jihadis. And imagine all of the money, time, energy, resources that we put into this idiocy, that Donald Trump continues to put into this idiocy, while avoiding the real problem, which is, yeah, guys just like Donald Trump, white supremacists, with guns, who are angry at the world. Okay, I had hoped for much more mop up and a few listener emails, but once again, Donald Trump has ruined all of our days and nights and lives, but
we press
not
on.
Not for too much longer. We press on. All right, let's just get out while the getting's good. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. We're really happy to have you here. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other this week or last year or for the past, 10 years, you can download them anytime for free at bradblog.com. I would ask while you're there if you can stop by bradblog.com/donate. You'll find an easy way to become a continuing supporter of the broadcast to help us stay on your public airwaves as long as we possibly can. This is a critical moment, so your help is greatly appreciated at bradblog.com/donate. You can drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am simply The Brad Blog. That is more than enough for now. We will see you again after the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe.